भगवान की
हरे कृष्ण। Should we speak with
this one?
Should we speak over here?
Lift up the center again.
The Bhadri is going to also come. It's coming down. Okay. As was the custom with His Divine Grace, usually before any class, he would chant the devotional bhajan, Jai Radha Madhava. So while we're waiting for our other members of our little discussion panel group, wow, that was a statement. We will chant Jai Radha Madhava and hope we please him somehow. It was kind of dramatic. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Yasodhana, Narayana, 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 Nar So we're gathered here this evening by the inspiration of His Holiness Ramapad Maharaj, who came up with this concept of having the morning class become an expanded, like a seminar presentation, and then the evening presentation, which I understand are being somehow broadcasted. Is that correct?
Are we live?
Yes.
Very good.
Okay. Hello out there to our viewing and listening audience. So right now, joining me here is His Holiness Ramapad Maharaj, Anuttama Prabhu, Tamahar Prabhu, and His Holiness Badri Narayan Swami. Soon to follow will be Gopinath Prabhu and Braja Mandali Devi Dasi, who are second-generation devotees born and raised in ISKCON. So the title, the theme, Personal Memories and Reflections of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And we're starting with Tamahar and then Anuttama and then Ramapad Swami. And I would appreciate if each one of you wouldn't mind giving a small self-introduction, particularly when and where you joined Srila Prabhupada and your initiation.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Malati Prabhu. I always find it a special honor and a privilege to be able to speak about Srila Prabhupada to any group. So this is something that I think we all enjoy very much. I joined, if some of you don't know, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness in 1972 here in Chicago.
Yeah.
It was the Emerson Street Temple in Evanston. That's where we were at that time. I was only there a couple years. So by that time, even by 1972, we didn't have so much access to Srila Prabhupada. He was traveling throughout the world, and you know, it wasn't like it was when it was very small and just, you know, intimate disciples were around him. So most of my personal experience with Srila Prabhupada was visiting with him at different temples, about six different places. I saw Srila Prabhupada, his lectures, went on a couple morning walks, a couple darshans, things like that. So I didn't have a great deal of intimate relationship. Of course, I have an intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada, but intimate personal experience. But those times that we did have the great privilege of the Vapu, of Srila Prabhupada, I think made a tremendous impression on all of us. And they're things that we remember our entire life, and they keep us, you know, sort of going in Krishna consciousness. Because we only have a few minutes each, I'm just trying to shrink down my list of some of the different I was just going to tell some of my own personal experiences. Just, you know, they're not like, you know, tremendous significant, but I mean, I found them important. And I think that every encounter with Srila Prabhupada gave us lessons. And we learned so much by how he interacted with devotees. And particularly, I found that Srila Prabhupada's compassion and his encouragement for all devotees was really amazing. Now, it is a fact that it seemed like wherever Srila Prabhupada went, he was like surrounded by sannyasis in this intimate circle, and some of them seemed to like not be so happy to have all of us, you know, get personal access. But that never came from Srila Prabhupada. And there were so many times when Srila Prabhupada just showed so much mercy to everyone. And let me give a few examples of that. When Srila Prabhupada went to San Francisco, remember that you probably have all seen that the movie where he's jumping up and down at the Ratha Yatra celebration? Well, I was there. That was 74 Ratha Yatra. We went out there, and it was very, very wonderful. But what I was going to tell about was during, I think, the class the day before, the day after, one of the problems we always had was at that time we had, you know, our wives all had small children. And my wife had a baby daughter at the time. We were on traveling Sankirtan and, you know, going out to San Francisco, and she was with me. And unfortunately, the child next to, you know, my kid was being good, but started crying. So the sannyasi said, "Oh, the women and children have to leave," you know. And my wife was devastated. Here she was, you know, a chance to see her spiritual master, you know, speaking, and she had to leave the room. And there weren't any speakers. So they're all back there. But finally, then the doors open, and some sannyasis come out and say, "Srila Prabhupada wants all the children to come up." So, of course, Prabhupada always made these wonderful arrangements. And, of course, he used to give out cookies. So my wife went up there, you know, with my baby daughter, Lolly Tosaki now, and, you know, took the cookie, and she couldn't quite handle it right, so Prabhupada took it personally and put it in her mouth, and you can imagine how ecstatic her mother was about that. It was like that made it all worthwhile, you know. Then another time when we were in Miami in 1975, when Srila Prabhupada visited there, my wife brought our older daughter, who was about 6 or 7. She was like in the Gurukula, but she was home visiting from the Dallas Gurukula. And she was kind of artistic, but she made this painting, but it was very childlike, you know, with like glitter, glue stuck on it and things like that. But it was a nice picture of Krishna and some pastime. You know, obviously a very childish work, though. So my wife brought, and by the way, I have my eternal gratitude. I always want to express for Shruti Kirti Prabhu, because Shruti Kirti would let anybody in that he could. He was like the friend of all of us. He was Prabhupada's personal servant. And it was during the middle of the day, and everybody was gone. So my wife went up with my daughter. She goes, "Sure, go on in. He's not doing anything." You know, so she gave Srila Prabhupada the drawing that she made. And Srila Prabhupada looked at it for a long time. And he said, "Very great art." Of course, it wasn't very great art, but it was Krishna. And that's, I think, why he thought it was great art, because here she was drawing pictures of Krishna. You know. Then he said, you know, and my wife said who she was and all that. Then of course, Srila Prabhupada says to my wife, Mantrini, he says, "And who are you?" And she says, "I said the stupidest thing I ever did." She says, "I'm her mother." she didn't even say her name. But, you know, they say that you feel like a fool in front of your spiritual master. I can absolutely attest to that. We usually always not only felt like fools, but we acted like fools. I remember that particularly in Washington, D.C., in Potomac, when Prabhupada came in 1976. There's many, many great stories about that time when Prabhupada went down to see the fireworks and so many things happened there. But those are a lot of stories there. What was I going to relate about that? We had made Prabhupada ice cream a couple times before, and he liked it. So my wife made this mango ice cream for him, and we handmade, and I went out and bought all the stuff, and she made it. And I brought it into Srila Prabhupada, kind of got through the phalanx of, you know, all the high security, you know, it wasn't Shruti Kirti this time, it was people less friendly. and so I brought the ice cream, and they said, "Oh, Prabhupada just had ice cream." They had flown in ice cream on dry ice from New Vrindavan cows. Now, how am I going to top that? I told this in New Vrindavan. They didn't like, I don't know if they like this story or not. But
I like it.
And the Prabhupada said, "What flavor is it?" And I said, "It's mango, Srila Prabhupada." He says, "Oh, bring it here." I knew that Prabhupada liked mango particularly, and that would get him. So he took it, and he ate the mango ice cream. And he said, "This is the best one, you know." And he said, "This is better than Bengali ice cream." Now, I don't even know if they make ice cream in Bengal, but I knew it was a compliment. You know? No. But anyway, and he said, "Bring it every night." And I was very happy to oblige him. And, yeah. And then this is the extent of my deep conversations with Srila Prabhupada. It's about things like ice cream. Anyway, this was very significant. He said, "What is it made from?" And that's when I became a complete fool. I forgot. I had bought, you know, it was really tough. I think it was milk, cream, and mangoes, and sugar, you know. And I had bought the ingredients, and I just sit there blank. Well, finally, I remembered. But there was something about, you know, at least for myself, I just felt always so stupid and unworthy around Srila Prabhupada. It's almost like it was difficult to even act like a normal human being sometimes because, you know, I was just so in awe of him and everything. But that was a real nice visit there, so we continued that. And I'm kind of in the mood here of the women and children, so kind of like showing how Srila Prabhupada really did give special attention, you know, to everybody, and he always made them always feel particularly special. And that's kind of why I'm just doing these kind of pastimes now, this sort of theme. And I'll finish with the last one in, another one in Miami. You know, I think I told this one in Atlanta, but anyway, all the Sankirtan devotees, we were all out on Sankirtan, just the women and children were left. And Aviram, the temple president, was taking Prabhupada for a walk. This was the old Coconut Grove temple. It was very beautiful grounds, and they were walking all over. And I'll just tell one quick story on that, a little aside here. Where he was staying had like a dirt backyard. Because, you know, it's hard to grow in the coral reefs and all the trees and everything's hard to grow grass. So they break leaves all over it. So Prabhupada immediately says, "Why don't you rake your leaves?" And Aaron says, "Well, because we can't grow grass. Prabhupada looks up and down the street. All the neighbors have grass growing. He says, the neighbors can grow grass, but you can't grow grass. He nailed us all the time. You couldn't get away with anything with Srila Prabhupada. There was a few more that he nailed us on that trip too, but I won't go into them. Anyway, he said, I'll tell you one quick one. We hadn't been distributing books, but we knew how important that was to Srila Prabhupada. So the month before Srila Prabhupada came, the temple president ordered 10,000 back to Godheads, and we were passing them out real quickly. And so Prabhupada's first question when he came up to the airport to the temple president was, how are my books being distributed? We distributed 10,000 back to Godheads. No big books? Nailed him, you know. Anyway, it was kind of funny. But anyway, on this this trip that was going around the tour, my little daughter Lalita, not the one with the painting, my middle daughter, was in a stroller. She was under 2 years old, and she had always seen pictures of Prabhupada. She knew that was Prabhupada. But in her little brain, she could figure out, this is different. This isn't the picture. This is really him. This is the real person. And so she kept saying all through it, she kept going, Prabhupada, 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 and pointing at him. And finally, this trip is ended. Prabhupada's walking up the steps to go to his house. He turns around and says, who is that child calling my name? And my wife thought, hey, this is her big chance, you know. And so she held her up. And I wasn't there, but this is the story that I'm told by everyone. It was almost like Prabhupada was staring at her, and she was staring back. And as my wife describes it, it's like she was having ecstatic symptoms. Her whole body was, like trembling and becoming, just completely overwhelmed, And Prabhupada just held his hand and said, thank you very much, and walked away. So, I told that story once, and one of Lalita's contemporaries said, I'll have to have a little more respect for her now after that. Anyway, so sometimes we don't know what great souls, all of these young people were, but Prabhupada really appreciated them. Prabhupada so much loved the children, the women, the men, the brahmachari, everybody. And he always made a special effort somehow or another to make everybody feel special, everyone to be happy, everybody to just feel his mercy, which we all did. So I should probably end at this point. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you very much.
So my name is Anutama Das. I became a member of ISKCON in 1975 in Denver, Colorado, and then was initiated by Prabhupada in 1976 and then 77. And I'm speaking next just because I have another call. Otherwise, I'd wait to the end and hear all these wonderful stories because I have a different perspective on the topic in that when I became a devotee, that Prabhupada, this is 3 or 4 years after Tamahar, and Prabhupada was just, he's doing his world tours. There were a lot of devotees, and it was very rare. I think kind of the people came a little after me. Many of them never saw Prabhupada at all. I was actually only saw him during the Mayapur Vrindavan festival in 1976. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen him. By the grace of my aunt, who loaned me the value of my motorcycle so I could pay for a ticket to go to India. So God bless her. I think she went someplace special. We had to sell it. She loaned me the money, and then I sold it. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, paid her back. Yeah, paid her back. Because then, as a book distributor, there was some system you get credit for whatever amount of money, a certain percentage is put aside. So I didn't have quite enough. So I had to make up for it. But yeah. So, yes. Yes. Yeah, it was so very much worth it. But I never went on a morning walk. I just kind of like struggle with the other 800 of us or whatever it was in the hot, sunny, crowded temple rooms at Vrindavan and Mayapur to stay awake to hear a few lectures. I don't remember any of those directly. But so I think in a sense, my story a little bit kind of serves as a bridge to many of you here and future generations, really that Prabhupada can be experienced and we can serve and surrender Prabhupada just as much now as we could have when he was physically present. And I think the fact is that all of you can know more about Prabhupada than people at that time did who were physically present with him, except for maybe one or two secretaries that travel with him all the time. You know, he'd show up in L.A. and everybody get pretty extensive relationship or time with him, and then he'd, you know, go somewhere else, and then you really wouldn't know much more. So when all the biographies and the diaries are coming out now, a lot of devotees that maybe were with Prabhupada, you know, in India, had no idea what was going on in South America. Now you can read biographies of devotees that were there in South America and South Africa and with Prabhupada in various places. So there's actually more of a chance now to really hear about the variety of Prabhupada's pastimes and like how he had all these really wonderful exchanges, like Tamahar Singh, than there was then. So we should never think that, okay, you know, it's always wonderful to hear devotees that directly had that association with Prabhupada. We should never think, well, they had Prabhupada's association, I can't. And we all know that Prabhupada explained, and the previous acharyas explained, Vani's more important than Vapu. So that's something that's always there. And I think it's especially important we have the opportunity to hear from devotees that had so much association with Prabhupada. And also to remember, as time goes forward, I mean, I think Malati's been organizing these probably for the last 5 or 6 years at national meetings. She always tends to take the lead and pull these together. And it won't be too many more years before there'll be less and less people that can have these presentations. It's just a matter of time. I mean, I can remember as a child growing up in an anomaly Christian family, watching every Christmas there'd be one less relative there, you know, one more empty chair. And of course, without having any devotional perspective, wondering what the heck went on and why aren't we talking about that person anymore. But in a real spiritual way, physically at least, there's going to be less and less devotees to be able to talk about Prabhupada's association. But we should be very careful to not let that mean we talk about Prabhupada less, or we don't remember Prabhupada even more, and that to think that we don't have the opportunity to associate with Prabhupada, because we definitely do, you definitely do, your kids, your grandkids, everyone has that opportunity. And we're seeing more and more and more, and hopefully continue in the future to really see that Prabhupada is the glue that keeps us together. He's the acharya, he's our founder, he's the one that wrote our books, he's the one that created the whole morning program, he's the one whose murti is here and will always be here. He's the one whose purports we study, he's the one whose lectures we listen to. He really is a central figure, and we can never let that go away, because if we do, then there's no International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We'll split up into so many different little groups. And I was thinking, I actually went in, you weren't there where you stay. I remember years ago, I was there doing work at the desk or something. You used to have a little quote there, I think it's from Gandhi, saying something to the effect that if you really want to honor a man, it's not about making a stature for him, it's about fulfilling his mission. Is there an exact quote?
Yeah. Create a association or assembly of persons who exemplify the teachings of that great person.
So, you know, one sense we could say, well, maybe our generation, whenever you build a statue, but to have the ongoing community and to dedicate ourselves to the values that Srila Prabhupada taught, that's what really counts. Because, I mean, as we're all seeing, and I know like devotees, God brothers, God sisters, our generation, the conversation has changed a lot in the last couple of years. It's really become, not become, but it's more and more becoming, it's more part of the discussion. What do we need to ensure is there before we're gone? There's a sense that, okay, the clock is ticking. And certainly keeping Prabhupada in the center is such a very important thing. And I'll just end with this part of reflection, which is I've been rereading Lilamrita, which I love and I haven't read in many, many years. Prabhupada, before he left to come to America, and I'd forgotten how many months and years he struggled alone. I think there's one chapter entitled Struggling Alone or in the Wilderness or something. And Prabhupada had no support. I mean, he was twice a month for some time printing his Back to Godhead. Wasn't really a magazine those days. It was kind of a newspaper. He didn't have the money to pay for the paper. He'd go to see the print in the morning. The printer would ask him, you know, Swamiji, have you eaten? And Prabhupada would say, no, it's okay. And he'd say, no. And he'd go get him something to eat. And then Prabhupada would personally go through and correct the proofs before they printed. And you know, the man that printed said sometimes he didn't have the money to pay for the paper. So he said, I would give him the paper. I couldn't do it every time. I'm in business, but sometimes I would give him the paper. And he would ask him, why are you doing this? And he's printing 1,000 copies and walking around town, sitting down at like a 1954 version of Starbucks in India, you know, and just sit down next to somebody he doesn't know and try to sell him this magazine for 6 paisa, I think. 6 paisa. And then he had a little extra money. He was sending them to VIPs, and I think he sent some even around the world. And just struggling alone, no help whatsoever. And that's made me reflect a little bit about, and we know we see later how grateful Prabhupada was for his disciples and even those that didn't become disciples who came forward to help, and how much more grateful Prabhupada is for each of you, and how whatever little bit we can each contribute is so important. Because Prabhupada is, you know, one elderly renunciate in India struggling and struggling and struggling with nobody to help him because of his devotion and his conviction, his determination. So much has happened. But as he said many, many times, a lot of it, you know, it's happened because they, so many came forward to help. So it's not that just we're helping, you're all helping. And your kids and your grandkids and your disciples and grand disciples in the future are going to help. And every one of us has a relationship with Prabhupada, and every one of us, the contribution matters. And every one of us can make a big change in the world by the blessings of Prabhupada if we keep him in the center. So thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much. If you have to go, it will, it's understood. And Kaladri is joining us now. So.
I think our audience knows me.
But the televised audience might know.
Oh, the televised audience, okay. Ramapad Swami, and I first began living in a Hare Krishna temple in 1970, summer of 1970, and was initiated along with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, same time, same day, 1971, and second initiated the next year. Malati has had the most association, so we'll give Malati the most time. She tells Prabhupada's stories very, very wonderfully. Just following the this mood of how Prabhupada extended care, I'll narrate two things. One was the result of a morning walk conversation, a morning walk in Mayapur, where, as you've been hearing, largely the sannyasis would attend the morning walk activities, and a few others would somehow manage to, I can't even remember what their criterion was, but if you were bold enough, I guess you get to go along or something like that. And one of my godbrothers, Bhagwat Prabhu, who was going along with the walk, when he was on the walk, he had stepped on something like a thorn. And when he came back, Prabhupada had the system of when he came before the deities in Mayapur, he would circumambulate around the altar. And when he came around from the backside of the altar, there was a bell. It was an ecstatic ritual that somebody would be holding the rope, and they would hand Prabhupada the rope, and he'd look around and ring the bell. And everyone would dance and dance and dance, and he'd smile and hand the rope back to that devotee, and he'd go smirk, you know, fold his palms and go around the altar again, come back around. And it was like an ecstatic ritual. And then he would go, after 3 times, he'd go sit on his Vyasasan. And, you know, jubilant devotees jumping in the air and having, you know, wonderful time singing Guru Puja song. And next to him, over by the side, it wasn't as high as our Vyasa-san here, but it was, you know, a little raised area. Prabhupada noticed that Bhagavat was limping. So right in the middle of, you know, being glorified as, you know, Jagat Guru, Srila Prabhupada, he called Bhagavat over and, you know, asked him, just leaned over and asked him what was wrong, and he said he had something in his foot, and so he wasn't able to dance. Prabhupada reached into his pocket, had some rupees, wrote on a piece of paper some prescriptions so he could take care of his foot, right in the middle of Guru Puja Kirtan, and sent him to go take care of it, tell him, you report back that you got the medication, right in the middle of Kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki. And similar but different, Yasoda Nandana, then Swami, was on a morning walk along with a group of us. This was in Vrindavan. And those of you that have been in Vrindavan can't imagine what it looked like before it looks like today. It was just agricultural fields in all directions. Now it's noise and commotion and buildings and smells and carbon monoxide and horns. So the procedure was, Prabhupada would come from his quarters, where his samadhi is, where there wasn't a samadhi then, he would walk through that area, out the main gate, make a right-hand turn, and walk down about some distance, a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles, whatever it was. And one of his favorite places was, after some clearing, then there was a grove of trees. So, and then Prabhupada liked just walking to the grove of trees. There was like a little path. And one particular morning, he was in a particular mood. The mood was, what a wonderful place is Vrindavan. One can live very simply in a renounced life, just depending upon Krishna, thinking of Krishna, depending upon nature. And he walked over to a tree and there were some pods growing from the tree. He said, are these edible? And started pulling on them. And then we just kept walking. And, you know, whatever nature supplies, a sadhu can live. We reached an area of what was kind of like a drop-off. And over on the other edge of the drop-off, there was a little cottage where a couple lived. And he said, see? They have a cow. And if the sadhu goes there in the morning at milking time and he has his pot, they'll gladly give him some milk and some roots and some simple edibles, and that's it for his economic solution for the day and the rest of the day, thinking of Krishna, how nice it is to live simply in Vrindavan. So he was going on like that. And then, I don't know if it was purposeful, I took it as purposeful. Right in the middle of this, you know, his mood, because his mood carried everybody when he was in a certain mood, he suddenly turned to Brahmananda and said, did you receive the $50,000? Did you check the color proofs? Did you make sure you do the, you know, like the business part of things? And then 180 degrees, then he was back into how simple it is to live in Vrindavan. And Jasoda Nandana started hopping on one foot. And Prabhupada stopped and said, why don't you wear shoes? Well, I didn't have time to get my shoes, Prabhupada. The morning walk was going out, right? You should wear shoes. You come into a place like this, you should wear shoes. And he said, yes, Prabhupada. So he was concerned. He was all the while concerned about our welfare, certainly. At the same time, the association I had was he was always instructing. Every moment, every circumstance was an opportunity to impart an important lesson of one kind or another. What I recall at the end of that particular morning walk was as we were approaching back to the gate, you could hear the kirtan. And Prabhupada looked around and said, where are the devotees? Because there were very few of us on the morning walk. And hearing the kirtan, apparently, you know, thinking of the devotees again. So Then he stopped, put the cane down, and said, when there's opportunity for association with the spiritual master, one should take the opportunity for his association. This is called vani. And then he went on and said, when there is vani, there is also, vapu. When there is vapu, there is also vani. And of the two, vani is more important. So even if there isn't vapu or physical association, one should be hearing from the spiritual master. He looked around, make sure we registered, and then lifted his cane and off he went. Most of my association was, aside from the classes, was morning walks. A few other things, but mainly it was morning walks. And one particular morning walk, I remember specifically, because he had just come from London, and he was in New York, and we went to the Brooklyn... I can't even remember the name of the park. The name of the, it was cold, and... He was just walking along the path, and then he walked over to, there was a pond, and he stood at the edge of the pond, and he looked, and a group of ducks came swimming towards where we were standing, and then Prabhupada turned to everybody and said, so what lesson have you learned? And the ducks were quacking. And so he said that the lesson is the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. Looked at us. Huh? He gave the purport. The duck that quacks the loudest. It's because somebody was looking for some, to give some prasadam, and the ducks were quacking. And so the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. Yes. One who calls for mercy gets the mercy. And I could narrate some additional stories, but they would all, at least the appreciation at the moment is, Prabhupada was imparting lessons. There's one nice lesson. There's two. In the Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn, we now have a different location in Brooklyn, but at the time when Prabhupada was there, it was a rented building, a double brownstone building. And the temple room was on one side, just like a little walk up, and then the temple room on one side. And the other side, of equal size, was Prabhupada's quarters. So at that time, there wasn't a BBT. It was ISKCON Press, because ISKCON Press had moved from Boston to the Brooklyn Temple because there was more space, but the press devotees worked over at Tiffany Place because it was less expensive and kind of like a warehouse type of place. So they did their, especially the artists did their work. So the artists, Prabhupada would come once a year and they would bring their artwork and Prabhupada would reciprocate with them to encourage them. And one by one, the artists would bring their paintings. And Prabhupada would regard the painting and make some remark about the quality or tell a story or something. I remember specifically one of the paintings was Maharaj Yudhisthira, first canto. When the Pandavas retire timely as a repainting of the first canto, showing Yudhisthira Maharaj with a danda heading for the north country. And Prabhupada explained, the brahmanas accept sannyas, the kshatriyas, when they renounce their kingdom, they don't accept sannyas. You painted him with a danda, they don't accept danda. He said, but it's okay. And like that, he was just and just saying funny things and happy things, and the mood was joyful. And so when Prabhupada laughed, everybody in the room laughed. Even he would tell a Bengali joke that nobody understood the meaning of the joke. Just his laughter was so joyful. Everyone laughed. Looking at Malati, because she said a lot to experience like this. And right in the middle of this joyful moment, because I was seated like as close as where you were, and Prabhupada pressed the buzzer on his desk, which was a signal for the person that was over, his servant over there in another room, to come and attend to something that Prabhupada wanted. And as that person was coming in the room, I won't give the name, Prabhupada thundered, like, I don't even remember what he said, because I just like shut down, because the mood was just the opposite, and all of a sudden it was this. And I found out later that, you know, the person was in Big Maya, and Prabhupada was chastising this, he was chastising him because, to get him out of Maya. I don't even remember what it was. He needed to do something, he hadn't done something, he hadn't done it timely, and Prabhupada blasted him. And as soon as he walked out of the room, it was joyful, jolly, happy, like it never happened. And I felt Prabhupada was like a kshatriya that took his sword out of his sheath and showed it and waved it and put it back. He wasn't, my appreciation was, he wasn't controlled by anger by any means. He was using it in service for a particular need, for a particular devotee, a particular requirement to help that devotee, because that I found out later what kind of Maya that devotee was in, and he was in Big Maya, and he needed, you know, bang on the side of the head, so Prabhupada gave it. We didn't know what was going on. We didn't need to know what was going on. Whatever Prabhupada did was just fine. But it was, it was kindness, and he could use whatever was appropriate kind of kindness for the circumstance to help bring the devotee closer to Krishna. See the Prabhupada key? Yeah. Yeah. No, what's that?
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
How long do we have? I don't mind, just tell me what to do.
We have until 8 o'clock, so there's you, there's Kaladri, and then there's two young people in the back that I'd like, that they've agreed to share their experience in Krishna consciousness. And
so my name is Bhajan Ryan Swami. And I first saw Srila Prabhupada in 1969, summer of 1969. Devotees told me, they said, Prabhupada is like a swan. I was thinking, long neck? I was trying to think of what. Must mean graceful, you know? So, understanding what. So Prabhupada was living in Los Angeles. He'd just gotten the temple. Actually, there was one wave, about 3 months, that Prabhupada was staying. He was finishing Krishna Book and Nectar of Devotion, and the temple was in La Cienega. And so we would drive up every Monday night, and Prabhupada would give class, an intimate group like this. And then we moved into the Watsika Temple. I was in Laguna Beach, at the Laguna Beach Temple. Later on, I went up as a brahmacharya to the L.A. Temple. And Prabhupada was there for about 6 or 7 months, giving class every morning. And then he would speak in the afternoon sometime. When Krishna Book first came, he would read Krishna Book in the evening sometimes. So it was really, you can't describe it. But I was a guest. I had not even moved into the Laguna Beach Temple yet. Prabhupada was speaking they just moved into La Cienega. So figure the temple room was about whatever, the quarter of this, right? Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was here, deities small, Rukmini Dwarkanath were there, ladies on this side, men on this side. Prabhupada was speaking, called for questions, and like right about there, this disheveled, homeless hulk of a man, long, greasy hair and dirty clothes, he started lumbering towards Srila Prabhupada. We were shocked. I mean, nobody, I didn't know when, I was a part of the program, I didn't know what was going on. Everybody froze. He got about as far as closest to me and you, and Prabhupada went, stop! He said, do you see this man? And it was just like the movies, everybody was looking at him, whoosh, everybody looked, it was Brahmananda. And Prabhupada said, if I tell him to, he will kill you. And the guy just sat down, and Prabhupada went right on like nothing had happened. Went right on. And my, you know, I had my idea, sadhu is shanti, shanti, shanti. But I was so impressed that Prabhupada handled the man perfectly, shut the whole thing down, was totally fearless, and completely unfazed by the whole thing. Just went right on, you know. Prabhupada later on said, I'm an old Calcutta boy. You know, Prabhupada knew how to deal with these far out things. So I'm a little tired, so it's a bit random. But I wanted to say one thing along with this same theme. I want to ask you a question. If we want to know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what book are we advised to read to get the deepest philosophical, complete understanding of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? What do we read? Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, who wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita? Now, did Krishnadas Kaviraj have the personal association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? No. He was a disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami and heard everything from the other gurus and took, you know, all the other Goswamis. But he did not have direct association. And yet he has the most intimate, profound, complete understanding of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The same is available for all of you. It is Prabhupada, and his association is beyond time and space. I'm not going Ritvik, don't worry. I wear glasses. There's the seer, there's the seen, and the act of seeing. Now, you can say that the glasses are an obstacle, right? They're an intermediary between the act of seeing and the object. And yet the glasses, they're not a blockage. They actually bring the thing into focus. We need to take initiation. We need to have Diksha and Shiksha gurus who are living physically and can bring the experience into focus. But the focus, just like Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita about the Sanjaya, by the mercy of his Vyas, was seeing the battlefield of Kurukshetra, even though he wasn't there. And Prabhupada says, by the grace of the spiritual master, the person, the experience becomes direct. So you can all have direct, profound realization of Srila Prabhupada far beyond me. Okay. This is just random because I'm a little bit tired. Tamal Krishmarsh told me, Prabhupada was in. And you can read those Nectar of Devotion lectures that Prabhupada's giving at the Radhadamodar temple. And he's looking at the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And they're so heavy, some of them. Prabhupada's saying, even a pinch of desire, and you cannot go back to home, back to Godhead. And he's talking about the Goswamis living on a little pad of buttermilk, and sometimes not even that, and it's so heavy. Now, the devotees were staying at Fogal Ashram, and I think Prabhupada may have been staying. I don't know where Prabhupada was staying, actually. But the devotees would walk from Radha Damodar back to Fogal Ashram, which was in Ramanreti, and they would go through Loy Bazaar. So you've got these mostly brahmacharis, mostly sannyasis. There were definitely some saintly Vaishnavis there. But, you know, saffron cloth. And they were trained. You're not supposed to take anything that's cooked by, you know, non-devotees or, you know, whatever. Only Krishna prasadam, and don't eat in public and all of this. But it was so difficult in India. And the devotees were struggling just to keep their life airs together. So when they came from Fogalash, from the Radha Damodar, and they came through Loy Bazaar, it's early in the morning, and there's all these sweet wallas, and they've just finished everything. And for them, you know, they give some sadhu, some brahmachari, some Vaishnav, and they get blessings. So as they would go by, they were saying, please take a little burfi, please take for free, have some. They resisted. They went a little bit further. Next shop walla said, please, you know, it's nice, para, take a little. You know, they wavered, but they pushed forward. The last guy, hot jalebis. And he's, you know, an elderly Vaishnav. He's got a sikha. He's got a picture of Prabhupada. He says, I'm a life member. Please take some. And they all broke down. So you've got this line of sannyasis and brahmacharis, and they're all taking these hot jalebis. Right around the corner, sure enough, comes Srila Prabhupada and his little ambassador. And anyone who knows Vrindavan, I mean, Loy Bazaar, I mean, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. So the devotees are lined up, and they were just thinking, well, all right, you know, Prabhupada's been speaking, and here we've embarrassed him in public. We can't even follow his words for 20 minutes. And they just folded their heads and said, just let it come on our heads. Just whatever it is, we deserve. Prabhupada came, signaled to the driver to stop, rolled down his window, leaned out to the devotees. They're thinking, well, here, you know, Rupa Maharaj gave an example. Prabhupada could be like one of those summer squalls, you know, just so they said, okay, here it comes. Prabhupada said, Bengali sweets, essential to life, and drove on. Don't imitate, I'm just saying, you know. So, Prabhupada would go on his morning walk in Los Angeles, sometime in Chevet Hills Park, and then sometimes he'd go to the war. And then we would all gather around the devotees who went and hear what they said. So some of you know Nayana Bhuram.
Yeah.
To give you an example, instead of offering a flower one time, you know, for the arti, he decided to offer a 4th of July sparkler. Quite an eccentric fellow, you know. Prabhupada said, no. Prabhupada said, it should have some fragrance. Yeah, or a flower, you know. So somehow or other, you can hear the tape, he's stuck on this thing about yoga. And he's saying, Prabhupada, can we practice hatha yoga? Prabhupada said, it's not so important. Prabhupada kept walking. Then finally he says, Prabhupada, can we practice hatha yoga? Prabhupada said, oh, you can do, what is it called? And he went like this. You know, have you ever seen the Indian army or military, they do jumping jacks, you know? So he relegated hatha yoga to this you want to do some exercise, do some exercise, but it's not going to advance your spiritual life. But, you know, fine, do jumping jacks, hatha yoga, I don't, you know, whatever. Again, Nayana Brahm came back at it again, you know, a little bit later and said, but Prabhupada, if we practice hatha yoga, this and that. Prabhupada said, do you see Brahmananda? Everybody looked at Brahmananda. Prabhupada said, he doesn't practice hatha yoga, and he can snap you in half. Get right on walking, you know. So just, I guess one, I'll tell two more and then I'll be finished. One, and I'll end with one from here in Chicago. Well, Tamal Krishmash told me this one as well. It was in Los Angeles. Prabhupada after his lecture, he would sit, there was an anteroom, there was a small side room, and Prabhupada would sit there and take prasadam. The temple presidents were visiting from all over. And they'd give Prabhupada a sample of the feast plate. He'd probably take a little bit and, you know, distribute the rest. So he took a bite out of this gulab jamun, Prabhupada did, and he put it on Tamal Krishna Maharaj's plate. So, you know, in those days, Tamal told me this personally, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, they were brahmacharis and they blitzed through the first plate in about 5 minutes, and the second was at the speed of the mind, and it was the third or fourth plate you began distinguishing, you know, forms, colors, and shapes, you know. So every plate he was transferring very reverentially this gulab jamun that Prabhupada had given him with a bite out of it, you know, you just imagine. He was transferring it very carefully. He said he was on about his third plate, and Prabhupada was sitting here. And he was looking at Srila Prabhupada. He was thinking how Prabhupada's ear was like Lord Buddha's, you know, long and so auspiciously shaped. And then he was thinking how Prabhupada's ear was perfectly shaped like a, you know, a radar disc for catching Shabda Brahman, you know. So he was meditating on Prabhupada's ear. And this devotee named Jai Gopal, who was quite a character, Jai Gopal reached over and grabbed off Tamal Krishna Maharaj's plate and swallowed the gulab jamun. And right in front of Prabhupada, Tamal grabbed him like this and was shaking him. Prabhupada said, oh, what is this, you know? And Tamal said, can I hit him, Prabhupada? Can I hit him? Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said he had the wherewithal to at least ask Prabhupada to hold off and whacked him. Prabhupada said, what did he do? He said, Prabhupada, he stole my gulab jamun. And Prabhupada said, ah, Vaikuntha qualifications. So I'll end with this last one. I'm going to wrap it into two. When Prabhupada came to Detroit, he was supposed to go from Toronto to Dallas to Detroit. And by the wonderful preaching of Govardhan Prabhu, they'd found this building, David, which is now the temple, Devasadan Mandir. And they'd sent Prabhupada pictures and described it, and Prabhupada liked it very much. So Prabhupada changed his plans, and instead of going directly to Dallas, he came to Detroit. Because he came about 5 days earlier than expected, all the preparation time telescoped into, instead of having, you know, 7 days, all of a sudden we had 72. So in defense of the devotees, nobody had slept. I mean, practically speaking, no one. The first time anybody really sat down is when Prabhupada was on the Vyasa Sangha. So what happened? There's about 200, no, probably really around 300 devotees, because all the Radha Damodar buses were there, everybody east of the Mississippi, everybody fell asleep. And I'm not just talking about a gentle nod, I'm talking, you know, full out, and out cold. I would have been sleeping, but I was cooking in the kitchen. I had some things in the oven and this and that, so I'd like to just see Prabhupada on the Vyasa Sangha, and I was going to run back to the kitchen. The Chaitanya Charitamrita had just come out. So instead of the Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada was reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when I got there, Prabhupada was making the point, he was saying, about Krishna's causeless mercy. You know, it falls without our doing anything to earn it. And Prabhupada was describing causeless mercy. He said, just like a man is walking down the road and he finds some gold, or he gets a letter that he wants some inheritance, and it just falls out of the sky on you. He said, in the same way, this movement is going on by the mercy of Krishna alone. And then he looked out over his glasses in the most loving, resigned, grandfatherly mood at all the devotees sound asleep. And he said, that is a fact. So it was really sweet. And the last thing, here in Chicago at the old temple in Evanston, I think the temple president was either maybe Sri Govinda or maybe might have been Uri Mishluk. But there was a balcony like this in the mezzanine. And and he was designing it so that his idea was when Prabhupada came in, he'd shower flowers. You know, all the devotees. And we did a whole test, you know, check, 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 and we would paper mache or, you know, confetti to time it so that it would falling around Prabhupada. You don't want it to go too soon, you don't want it to go too late. I mean, he was a tight guy. We trained everything, right? So on the appointed day, and there was a signal, you know, when Prabhupada's car was there and he was right at the steps, when he was walking, there was a whole system. So sure enough, on the appointed day, Prabhupada arrives. He's walking up the steps with all the big, you know, Brahmananda and all the big sannyasis and this and that. And there was some innocent Vaishnavi, some Mataji, with a little baby. You know, Prabhupada's got, she came outside to see Srila Prabhupada. And the steps, you know, there were steps going down. And all of a sudden, there's Prabhupada coming right at her with all these sannyasis and this, and she froze like a deer in the headlights. And, you know, sannyasi, Prabhupada, perfect gentleman, stepped back and opened the door and gestured for her to go in. Because she was obviously freaked, you know. Prabhupada just, like, but here's the blissful part. So she walked in, everyone thought it was time, and all these flower petals fell on her. And Prabhupada could immediately, who didn't miss a thing, Prabhupada just started doing those belly laughs, you know, Prabhupada laughs. And Prabhupada's whole frame was shaking. That was the funniest thing. Because he immediately could understand what had happened. So all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Bhadri Narayan Swami.
Hare Krishna. My name is Kulagi Das. I joined the temple in 1969 and had the good fortune to be initiated by Prabhupada first and second. He personally gave me both, and I also had the undeserved good fortune to be his personal servant on a few occasions for short periods of time. And it was very wonderful. Some of it was bittersweet. And I guess the theme is some kind of instruction from Prabhupada. There was a time before Krishna Balaram Temple was completed, and Prabhupada grew ill, and he was sick, and that was the first time we had 24-hour kirtan. I think 73, 74, I can't remember the exact date. And Prabhupada's quarters were there, the temple construction was going on, and there were a few huts along the side where devotees stayed. And I was the temple president when Shruti Kirti came to New Vrindavan, and we shaped him up, and he and I, Prabhupada, we would serve Prabhupada together from time to time. And Shruti Kirti became sick at that time, and so I was staying doing the service to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada also became very sick. So I was sleeping, Prabhupada's bed was there in Vrindavan, and I would sleep right at beside his bed, and he would call me, and he was very frail, he was sick, and I would walk him to the bathroom. And in Vrindavan at night, the power would go out, so the fans wouldn't work, and so inside would become very hot. So Prabhupada would want to be moved out to the veranda on the porch, and so I would take Prabhupada and step by step walk Prabhupada to the outer bed. Then I'd have to run in and get his pillows and get some sheets. And so I'm rushing to do this because Prabhupada is standing, leaning against the wall. And I'm all of a sudden hurrying, you know, moving this and moving that to get make comfortable Prabhupada. And all of a sudden I hear very quietly, "Do it nicely." Prabhupada, even though he saw I was in a hurry, he wanted everything done just right, nicely. And there was no circumstance, even for his own comfort, that he didn't want me to do it just nicely. What you see, these carvings were done by a Ranchabai Mistri in Mumbai. And New Vrindavan, we found him, and we consigned him the first carving. It was the altar for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And so I was the temple president then. And if you know at that time, the Reserve Bank, even now probably, if you're going to get something out of India, you have to show money coming into India. They control the currency. Well, the currency, the donations from the devotees in India were paying for the Sringasan. And I had to get the Sringasan finished and completed and back to New Vrindavan before Prabhupada came for Janmasthami. So it was a difficult task. But Prabhupada said so many nice things about my management skills and talked about, you know, my expertise in this and that. So I'm, you know, slightly puffed up about that. So I'm showing Prabhupada the drawings, and I'm thinking, I actually had to bribe someone to get the Sringasan out of India because we showed no money coming into India. So I'm showing Prabhupada this excellent drawing. I was able to get it out of India, so I'm thinking pretty confidently of myself. So I'm showing Prabhupada, we have carvings of the incarnations on the Sringasan, and Prabhupada liked it very much, and he said it was very nice. And so I'm folding up the paper, and then Prabhupada turned to me and said, "How much have you paid?" And I told him the amount, and Prabhupada looked at me and said, "You have paid too much." So all of that, you know, expertise and pride, and I've done this and done that, he snapped it in a second. So we get the Sringasan out of India. We get it set up basically, like you say, last minute. Prabhupada's driving up the road, and the devotees are taking the tools out the back of the temple. And so Prabhupada comes into the temple, curtains goes up, he pays obeisances and sees the deities, and he's looking at Radha Vrindavan Chandra and looking at the Sringasan carefully, and he turns to me and he says, "It was worth the price." And later he said, "If the thing is right, then you can pay the price, whatever it takes." So I kind of got a little bit of rectification. Yeah, somewhat. I'm sure some of you have heard this, but it seems to be, you know, a story devotees like. In Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was sick, we would massage him. I was massaging him at night just to relieve some of his pain. Massaging his fingers, his back, his neck. I remember the first time I massaged Prabhupada, I was massaging his back and Prabhupada said, "Harder." And so I pressed a little harder. My spiritual master, the founder Acharya, the, you know, Jagat Guru, so I'm trying to be gentle. And he turns again and says, "Harder even." So three times. And so he kept saying harder, and then he finally turned to me and he said, "Do you know what hard means?" So, but when he was sick, he had a very large bed, so we would climb inside the mosquito net to massage Prabhupada, try and make him feel better, rub him with powder and certain things, just to try and relieve some of his, the pain and whatever he was feeling. And at one time, there was a mosquito that got into the net. And the mosquito buzzed around, and I went to grab for the mosquito, and Prabhupada said, stop. And so I'm thinking in my mind, oh, even the mosquitoes are liberated souls in Vrindavan. You cannot hurt even a mosquito in Vrindavan. So I'm thinking that way. So I go back to massaging, and the mosquito landed on Prabhupada's leg, and Prabhupada went like this. And he turned to me and he said, he has attacked me. Now you can get him. So there's a lot of instruction in that, but I'm not really sure, exactly how, what instruction you want to take from that. Many of you see this footprints of Srila Prabhupada, and I'll tell you exactly how that happened. Prabhupada was in New York for the Rath Yatra, the first Rath Yatra down Fifth Avenue. And I came up from New Vrindavan with the briefcase, but in the briefcase was clay from New Vrindavan. I asked Srila Prabhupada, can I take your footprints, Prabhupada, so that we can worship them during Guru Puja? Prabhupada said, okay. So I opened the briefcase, took the slab of clay from New Vrindavan, covered it with talcum powder, and I asked Prabhupada, I helped Prabhupada, please step on the clay. So Prabhupada stepped on the clay, then he stepped off the clay. And I looked, and I didn't see any footprints. So I was thinking, what kind of mystical Prabhupada stepped on the clay? There's no footprints to show he stepped on the clay. And then, then my practical mind as a temple president and said, oh, I'm sorry, Prabhupada, let me soften the clay and so we can do it again. And Prabhupada said, okay. So Prabhupada went to take prasadam and we added water to the clay and massaged it, made it much softer. So it brought it back in after Prabhupada was done prasadam, covered it with talcum powder, and Prabhupada stepped on the clay. And this time, I took every toe and pressed it into the clay. Every toe individually, and I pushed his heel down, and then Prabhupada stepped off. I saw he had the indentation, and I dusted his feet off. Prabhupada then put on his clothes, went down and climbed on the Rath Yatra cart and went down Fifth Avenue. So that original clay we took back to New Vrindavan, we made molds, and what you see here is the castings from that very mold of Prabhupada's lotus feet. We kept the clay, and if you go to New Vrindavan, you'll see in a glass case there's gray clay with some talcum powder in Prabhupada's feet. So we can say that there's actually the dust of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, guaranteed. So he gave so much mercy to us all, and all I can say is that unlike some of the more philosophically inclined, I got to do some service to him personally. I got to cook for him, I got to massage him, and he was very kind and always encouraging. Every once in a while he would give me a little, nudge. But so he must have understood I'm not very philosophically inclined and a bit sentimental, so I got the worship of his divine body. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you very much, Gladi Prabhu. So here we have Gopinath Prabhu. And we have wonderful, I can't say Vrindavan, Braj Mandali. This is Vrindavan. She'll introduce herself. But these two have conceived and born and grown up in ISKCON.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. My name is Braj Mandali Dasi. And as Mother Malati has said, Yes, even though I wasn't able to see Srila Prabhupada with these eyes, I feel very fortunate to have grown up with his presence all around me. Hearing stories like this from so many great devotees just makes me feel so close to him.
Who's your mother and father?
Oh, yes. my father is Sesha Das, and my mother is Madhumati Dasi. And just throughout my life, I've always been surrounded by Srila Prabhupada. I grew up attending Guru Pujas, and I know, as Rompad Maharaj was telling a story about Prabhupada at Guru Puja, even though I never saw him there, just, you know, going to Guru Puja in the morning, seeing his murti, hearing lectures, reading books, I feel like he's always been there for me. I never knew my paternal grandfather, but that doesn't lessen the influence he has on my life or the love that I feel for him. And I feel the same way for Srila Prabhupada, you know. Never having been in his presence, his personal presence, I don't feel like it lessens the amount of love I feel from him or I feel for him. You know, around our house, we always have discussions, and, you know, any good argument, you need evidence to back it up. So I've always heard, oh, what did Prabhupada say on this topic, or what did he say about this? So, you know, it's said that his teachings are the law books for the next 10,000 years, and I definitely feel his presence. As I was preparing to take initiation from my spiritual master, Srila Indradyumna Swami, I could definitely see, and, you know, I appreciated his relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and I could see that connection. So even in one sense formally, you know, I feel that taking initiation makes me formally connected to Srila Prabhupada. I just feel like hearing these stories, I feel so much love and encouragement. And in short, basically, I can't imagine my life without Srila Prabhupada and his influence and love and encouragement. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. My name is Gopinath, and I had the good fortune, it wasn't my choice, but I was born in Vrindavan. My parents were living there at the time, and I had the fortune of attending Gurukul for basically all my life.
Your parents' name? Your parents'
name. Oh, my parents' names. Brajavihari Das and Ananda Vrindavan Ishwari Dasi. And actually, Bajranayan Swami kind of helped my parents come together way back in the day. but I had the chance to go to Gurukul for 12 years, and there's a photo there of Srila Prabhupada laying the cornerstone. And I've always really found that to be quite a significant photograph, because to me it comes across as he laid the foundation for us, but he didn't want us to stop there. He showed us how to love. He gave us so much love. He gave us so much encouragement. We heard in the morning about how he always encouraged in all of his letters, even if he was trying to tell someone or encourage someone in a certain direction, he always provided a positive reinforcement. So I've really connected to that, and seeing that he gave us something to build upon. He built a house for all of us to live in, and we keep expanding it. It's been a lot of fun. I find that we hear that it's a hard journey. Life is hard. Krishna consciousness. We have to get over all these things. But just because it's hard doesn't mean that it can't be fun. And he's given us this beautiful philosophy that allows us to have just as much fun doing it as it is to share and relish the relationships we have amongst each other and with him. So I'm really, really grateful. It is amazing how much he has done. Just one man and all of these temples, communities, lives affected and changed, and how many smiles he's put on people's faces. That's always really beautiful to see every day at a temple. So, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you very much, Gopinath. So our session is, we have six more minutes. So I will, my name is Malati Devi Dasi, and I was initiated in the first initiation in San Francisco, January 17th, 1967, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, who was present. And a week later was, by his grace, married with my husband, Shem Sinder. I'll tell something that relates to this temple and my service to Prabhupada. I was in Jaipur with another devotee named Srimati Devi Dasi, and our mission was very blissful. We had just purchased three sets of deities. So one of these sets of deities is in Toronto, one of these sets of deities is in Detroit, and the other deity is in Dallas. In fact, large Kalachandri and Chota Kalachandri. We were ready to leave. They were packed. They were put on the lorry and went back to the place we were staying to collect my belongings. And there was a telegraph. And in these days, we messaged by telegraph. So it came in a yellow sheet of paper. And it was addressed to me. And it just said, "Bring deities large, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." We already had our tickets to go, but now I had another request. So Srimati left, and I stayed with my daughter. And I went back to the Murtiwalas, not knowing what would happen, because actually you don't just usually go. I mean, sometimes you're lucky and you'll find something that's readily available. But generally there's some little adjustments, or even you may have to have completely new deity carved. So I didn't know what was going to happen. But by Krishna's mercy, in a very quick way, I found beautiful Radha and Krishna deities, which I personally packed because I'd been taught how to pack so that they wouldn't break in transportation. And my daughter and myself and the two boxes of deities, we went together on a lorry, one of those great big huge trucks, from Jaipur, an all-night run to Bombay, and arrived at Juhu early in the morning. Now, Juhu at that time wasn't built. We were living in tents, so it was, and they weren't like very elegant tents. They were just kind of sprawling mosquito nets, basically. So the devotees weren't expecting me to arrive in a big truck. And, you know, they were kind of looking startled that I was there with these two big boxes. And all of a sudden there was a message. Prabhupada wanted me to come. He'd somehow heard I had arrived. He wanted me to come into Bombay. We were about to have our second big, large Pandal program in Bombay. And Juhu, being undeveloped and so far away from center town, was not convenient for him to come go back and forth. So he had a very nice situation by the grace of one of our life members in a nice place called Seaface Park. And another good friend of the temple had a relative who had departed, and that relative's flat was unoccupied. And these were substantial people, well-to-do, so when I say flat, it was quite a substantially nice place. So I arrived with the deities. I was driven by Mahamsa, who had been an early devotee. He'd come from a Parsi family, and he eventually had taken sannyas. But at that point in time, he was still brahmachari, and we had an old taxi cab. The meter wasn't running anymore, and he drove us in that. So when we arrived, the deities were put in they had been out of the box. So they were put in the elevator, and we went upstairs, and they were brought to the front room where all the furniture had been taken and put out, because this flat was furnished. But Prabhupada didn't use a lot of furniture. He used his, if there was a desk, he would use a desk, meaning a low table. And otherwise, everything was pretty much removed. My husband was his secretary at that time, and one other person who was his personal servant. I arrived with the deities, and he wanted me to stay and do cooking and house cleaning. So I was there was a, except these people being well-to-do in the flat, there was a built-in servants' quarters. So my daughter and I were given the servant quarters. But the deities were there in the front room, and there was a door that connected his room, which was the master bedroom, to this front room. So we opened the door, and he came through, and he looked at them. He said, "Bring them here." He's pointing to his room. Put them there, and he wanted them right in front of his desk. And he was just looking at them, and I could tell he was happy. You know, that the fact that he wanted it right in front of his desk, of course, indicated that he was pleased, but just the expression on his face. And he said to me, "Put out your hand." So I put out my hand, and he took a ring off his finger and he dropped it into my hand. He said, "See if it fits." So it was fitting my middle finger. So these deities then were officiated at the second Bombay Pandal program. And after the program, I was told to pack them up again. And I didn't ask any questions, just I packed them up, and they were sent to America. And that's Kishore Kishore. Yeah. So that's my little connection of service to Srila Prabhupada in Chicago. And as most of you who are connected to the temple know, when Prabhupada was asked, why did Radharani's name come second, because mostly it's Radha, Krishna, you know. Prabhupada said, "I was saving the best for last." So, Kishore Kishore Kijai. So, 8 o'clock, time is up. So, thank you all very much for coming and encouraging us. And thank you too, because someday we won't be here, but this katha should continue. Hare Krishna.